All right. So this afternoon I have with me Paul Nye. He's not the science guy. He's the music guy. Paul Nye, the music guy, and I think bicycles guy also. And I believe you're from Minnesota, but you're out here visiting family for a couple months. And I know that you know Steve and Christy Niebel, who air sound poetry on Radio Tacoma and also much of their own music. You're here to talk today, primarily anyway, about the music that you compose and sing. So you want to tell us just a little bit about yourself, where you're living now, and
I live in a small town called Walker, Minnesota. Walker, and it's north central Minnesota, which is a big tourist area. We live on one of the largest lakes in Minnesota. There's five big lakes, and Leech Lake is one of the largest ones. We like to joke that we can put, when the Mall of America was built, we like to joke, well, we can put 283 Malls of America on our bay alone. So that kind of gives perspective to what big looks like. But it's a small town of 1,000 people that goes to about 30 to 50,000 in the summer because of tourism. And my wife and I moved up there from Minneapolis, 1978. Yeah, I'm that old. And been married 4 years. We moved up and raised our two children. And my daughter lives in Tacoma, and our son lives in Denver. And I worked as a journalist for 20 years up there, television for 10 and 10 as a newspaper editor. And then I left that to open a bike shop, retail bike shop. Had a retail bike shop for 6 years and then closed that down and just did repair and service and accessories and that in the summer and got away from the retail end of that. And I started working for the school district up there for 14 years or so. But I've done music all my life on the side, and it's been really good to me. So.
Good. And I know we have with us today also Bob Lee, a dear friend of both of us. And you and Bob met at Lutheran Bible Institute?
Lutheran Bible Institute, 1968. I went there for 2 years. He was a second-year student, so 2 year school. And he was assigned to me as my big brother, I think because we both play guitar. And he taught me how to finger pick. And that kind of led me on that journey to get into finger style, stuff like Tommy Emmanuel, Joe Robinson, stuff like Chet Atkins, you know. But I've kind of gone the whole gamut from rock and roll to finger style. I'm mostly doing acoustic stuff and finger style, and then I do a lot of recording in my home studio, where I just write and record and.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about some of the songs? We just looked at some of the titles, and you said that you like to do word play. So, burping up rainbows.
I originally wrote it as a kid's song, and a dear friend of mine who'd been doing children's music for 30 years, he kind of admonished me. He says, "Paul, you don't want to do this one." And I did sing it for a group of fourth graders once, and I explained to them the background of the song, and the teacher was kind of looking at me mysteriously, but the kids listened, and it was interesting because I got feedback from a parent about a week or two later, stopped me in the grocery store, and she said, "That song you sang, my daughter just was raving about that song." That's what she say. And she nailed the song. Burping Up Rainbows is a song about being challenged in life, and instead of looking at the difficult things that we go through in life, we turn them into rainbows, turn them into blessings. We look at what we can learn from that. So it's like I use this phrase in other songs. When you step in poop, there's a reaction. Sidewalk, poop on the sidewalk. There's a reaction that you can have. You can say, "Oh, expletive," you know, and get upset about that, which is understandable. Or you can say, "What? Where's the dog? I got a puppy. Where's the pony? Where's the pony? There's a puppy around here for me," you know, and looking at it from a different perspective. So, burping rainbows, puking happiness, throwing up daisies because I've been so blessed.
Oh, okay. I
That
like
cloud
it.
on the horizon, don't bother me because I'm burping up rainbows and living free. So there's a sense of freedom when you get to that point where you can look at difficult things in life, not so much as a blessing, but something that you can learn from them. And that's really, really difficult to do. Really difficult to do. There's no doubt about it. But as I challenge kids, is why is it there's some people that grow up in poverty and racism or have all these things going against them and live difficult lives can be some of the happiest people in the world? And I've met them. And yet you have people that have everything given to them, and they're the most angry people that just don't know how to deal with life.
Yeah.
They feel like life owes them something.
There's actually a film about that, a documentary called Happy.
Yeah.
And by a film director, Rocco Belic, Belic. And I show it in some of my classrooms because it's about people who live in poorish countries, are poor. They're often pretty happy. And they talk about what actually makes human beings happy.
Yeah, yeah. There's a, it's not a new concept, but I think it was, who was the guy? It said Charles Swindoll wrote this thing called Attitudes, and basically the crux of it is he's convinced that life is made up of 10% what happens to us and 90% our attitude towards what happens
sure.
to us.
Yeah.
So
familiar.
And that's yeah. So that's what burping at rainbows is. It's some of the stuff I do, I think it's people die a lot right away because it sounds controversial, but it isn't. Mm-hmm. It's just the titles somehow are misleading a little bit. But I like doing a play on words and messing with people's heads. I call them, you know, just mm-hmm. throwing something out at them and then making them to think differently about what they're hearing.
Mm, I like it. So. Actually, there was a song that we sang at church this Sunday, but I stayed home. I just took a day off from church and watched it online. And so I was just listening, and the words were, great things happen when God messes with us. Now, I misheard
oh, wow.
it. It's actually great things happen when God mixes with us. But I heard great things happen when God
messes
with
us. Okay. Yeah.
Which I sort of, I've been singing around the house.
I like that. You know, great things happen. There's two song ideas there.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed home. That'd be a good song idea. And great things happen when God messes with us.
Yeah. So yeah. Let's talk about that song, It's All Your Fault.
Yeah. That's another one. That was kind of along that line. I joke with my pastor in Walker. I said, Mark, you know I rank your sermons by the number of song ideas I get out of them. And he kind of laughed. And he says, I'd like to hear some of those. I said, well, it was a 5-song sermon, so you're going to get 5 songs. So it's kind of funny. And I've been going to Anchor Church in Tacoma, Brian Halferty, and he's the same guy. I mean, the same kind of guy. Last Sunday, 3 song ideas. I don't know if I'll ever do anything with them. But anyways, my pastor at Walker was preaching. I don't remember what the topic was, but this idea I was visualizing, when I go to heaven, I want to meet someone who comes up to me and says, you don't know me, but you sang at my college or this time, whatever, in 2001 or 19, whatever, and you said something that really made me start thinking about my life and turn my life around eventually. I want to meet that person that I didn't know about in life who says, I'm here because of you, so it's all your fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's all your fault that I'm here because of you. I'm blaming you right now.
Okay.
So what if we got blamed? What if we were accused and people blamed us for doing good to them?
Oh, I like it.
It's all your fault that I'm here. So it starts out with this idea about a guy getting beat up, you know, and he's down and out. And someone comes along and picks him up, and he says, it's all your fault. It's all your fault that you pick me up.
Oh.
So I'm blaming you for turning my life around.
Oh, okay.
So it's a different twist on it.
On the Good Samaritan.
And I like it. You know, I'm vice president of a big deal, Minnesota Songwriters Association, and I've been a part of that group for a few years now. And they reviewed that song once, and some of the people had a difficult time with it because it's not normal.
Mm.
You know, what fault means you're blaming someone for something. Yeah. Mm. Why not blame them for something mm-hmm. good? I mean, that's songwriting.
Yeah. Like it.
So.
So what about Eyes of a Puppy?
That's to the point. It's everything we love and hate about dogs, and in the end, dogs are basically they're family members. Mm-hmm. They're You know, dogs love us, cats are indifferent.
Okay.
You know, so.
Yeah, what was you said, Bob? Dogs have owners and cats have staff?
Yeah. Dogs have masters and cats have staff.
Cats have staff.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and I did a couple of dog songs, and that's the most recent one, Eyes of a Puppy. But it's kind of a cute, funny song and a little bit of a tearjerker because, you know, it basically says in the end when life gets you down, there's one thing you can count on. You know, it's your dog.
Yeah.
Because your dogs are non-judgmental.
Yeah.
Cats can be that way too. You know, there's therapy in animals. So.
Yeah. Well, my sister's a veterinarian, and she actually focuses her work on behavior, animal behavior. Usually it's something to do with their humans that's causing the problem. But I just want to plug, we have an archive on Radio Tacoma that anybody can go to and listen to her programs on animal behavior, and then they can listen to this interview also. We have a section under programming for interviews, Radio Tacoma interviews, so that's where they will be able to find this interview with you if they want to
re-listen to it. Maybe she could play the Eyes of a Puppy as a break song or something
sure.
like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We could do that. Cool. That'd be an excellent idea.
I have another one that I didn't include. I think that one, that one's called My Dog Likes to Read. And it was written after our dog, as a puppy, tore up four library books on four different occasions over a period of 2 months. And the funny thing is, my wife is on the library board, and it ended up costing her $100, $25 per book. So
wow.
I thought she was over that. She's not getting over that. She loves to read. She tears up newspapers, letters, and books. So that was okay. That was called My Dog Likes. I figured, and it's and that's got to play in the word. He sniffs out the stuff he wants to read. And,
uh-huh.
You know,
so it's not just any books. Okay.
He's very specific about yeah. books.
Plus they have to be library books.
Yeah. I found out he eats money, too. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a whole story behind that one. I haven't written a song about it, but he ate up an envelope that I had money in, and I just had to wait for a few days. And I laundered the money.
Story.
Yeah, I laundered the money. And,
okay, I follow that now. I know you play, when you come here, you play some of the venues. You
yeah.
do Victory music down at the Antique Sandwich Company sometimes?
Well, I've been only online with them. Last December, I came during the pandemic, and I Googled open mics in Tacoma. And the first one that popped up was Victory, and they were all online on Zoom. So
oh, okay.
I got the address, and I just showed up one night, and they said, oh, where are you? And I said, I'm from Minnesota, you know, so told them what I was doing, and that's every Tuesday at 7 o'clock out here for 2 hours, and there's as many as 10, 15 people sometimes on.
Okay, are they still doing it?
Yeah, they're doing it.
Oh, great.
So in the course of a year, I kept doing it when I was back in Minnesota. Over there, it's like 9 to,
mm-hmm.
to 10,
sure.
9 to 11. So I kept doing it, and I think in that over a year that I've been doing that, I've only missed like four times. So it was really interesting because Christy and Steve Niebel were the only two that I'd ever met, and they didn't even remember me. I saw them, and I said, we met when they were, I think, about 3-4 years ago when they were playing at a farmer's market.
Probably
and, came to, and they vaguely remember that, vaguely remember it, but I remember them from that and in Proctor.
Yeah.
And so I'd never met any of these people, and I told Christy and Steve, I'd really like to meet some of these people when we come out. Let's have a party. So they sponsored a party, and a bunch of them came out, and it was just so nice to see these people face to face, and then we just didn't. And Bob went there. And so it's a lot of fun. It's a great group of people, good musicians and so on.
Okay, cool. I'm just playing a little bit of your song, just one you might want to comment on. I don't know what I'd be without you.
Yeah, I don't know what I'd be without you in my life. That's another one where you have to wait till the end of the song to realize it's about a relationship, but it's about a relationship with a gift.
Mm.
So it goes on this whole story about, you think it's a relationship with a person, and in the end, the singer sings, I don't know, I don't know what I'd be without you in my life, because music, you're a part of my life.
Ah.
So it's a relationship you have with music.
I love it.
And I realized in writing that, that, and I think musicians will relate to this, that the relationship we have with music parallels the relationship we have with people, except for the physical, unless you tear up your song. You know, there's intimacy and there's physical with music, but you know, you don't have sex with your song.
Right.
But everything you go through with a person, you're going to go through with music when you write a song.
Yeah.
You get angry at it, you fight it, you yell at it, you throw it out, you well, I hate to say it, but you abuse your music.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, unfortunately, that happens in human relationships, but I can't think of an emotion that I don't experience or that people wouldn't experience with a human that they go through when they write a song.
Mm-hmm.
It can be depressing, it can be challenging, it can be, you know, you think of all these different descriptors or adjectives, I guess, that. And I try to think of my wife, Linda, the relationship I have with her, which is a really good one after 48 years. And you know, the struggles that we've had and the challenges and the good times and all that stuff. And I tried to think of those things. But it kind of teases people. And there's little lines in there that kind of, that you can read into, like a lyrical wasteland. You're like a lyrical wasteland. My coffee cup is empty except for the tears from my eyes. Another songwriter singing comes as no surprise.
Oh.
you know, so it's, he's crying in his coffee instead of over someone who broke up with him.
Uh-huh,
he's crying,
right,
because he's upset at the song that he wrote or something like that. So that's kind of what that is. But it isn't till the end. And I look at music as being a gift from God. And I, in some ways, I look at it as a blessed curse, because people can use music for good or bad. And I've written songs that I can't say that I'm not proud. Well, probably some that I'm not proud of, but there are songs that I've written as a believer that I ask myself, why did I write this song? If my music is to glorify God, why did I write this song? I mean, and I've struggled, you know, recently. Just in the last year, writing a song that I sat back for 3 months and I didn't know why it came to me, why I wrote it. You know, I could force it out of my mind, so I'm not going to write a song about that.
Mm.
But, you know, why put those restrictions on art?
Mm.
And there was a radio station, in a MPR, Minnesota Public Radio Station, in my state, and I know the guy that does it and plays, has a show called Minnesota Homebrew, and he likes my music, and I said, I have a song that's very controversial. And he says, I like controversy. He sent it to me, and I sent it to him, and he says, I want to play it. And I just about fell over because I didn't think he would play it. But he says, I will play it, but I want you to give me a 30-second intro to the song. Well, how do I give him a 30-second intro without giving away what the song's about?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a song that I've never been able to perform publicly because the first words out of my mouth, people dial off and they'd be offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't. And it's not foul language. It's just the image that I'm mm-hmm. planting in their mind. So this whole song goes by using language to plant this image in your mind. And you have this image that's a positive image for most people. And then at the end of the song, the rug gets pulled out and you realize, oh my God, this guy just, he messed with my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go back and you realize that every line that I say in the song is a double entendre for what it is in the end.
Send that to me. Let me think about
it. I could. Yeah, I could.
Okay.
I will do that, and
okay.
I'll let you decide. And,
okay. What's the title? Just curious.
It's called, well, it was called Getting Laid.
Okay.
But it's, I just call it Laid now because Getting Laid, but it's, yep. You know, it, let me explain.
No, that's all right.
Let me explain.
Let the mystery
as I tell people, I said, there are two inevitabilities in life, and taxes is the one because some people don't pay taxes. Those inevitabilities are, every one of us are here because two people had sex, and every one of us are going to die. And so this whole song being laid talks about this experience, because sex involves every single part of our culture. There's not a single part that's not touched in our culture, religion, politics, advertising, music, everything. And end of the song, the rug gets pulled out and the guy's getting laid in the ground. So it's, the point is, what is your purpose in life? If you're not living for a purpose, then everything that was in the song is meaningless. And so, and you look back at that and you reread the song after you or listen to it again, then you realize, oh man, I'm getting laid first time ever. I've been this long on my back. Well, you got that image in your mind of a sexual act, and it isn't. The guy's in a hearse. You know, so the whole song basically messes with people's heads, and then you realize in the end that this guy's being laid in the ground. So that's what the song's about, and the whole song's about purpose. Well, as a Christian, I'm not going to go into a church much as a youth group, let alone a secular coffee house, and be able to sing that song. I'd love to, but, you know. So, but it's a, you know, my wife had an interesting insight on that, and she's very supportive and gives me a lot of freedom to create. And I think about a month or 2 weeks after I wrote it, we were having a discussion. I was headed out the door. And I said, yeah, it's like this song that I wrote, and I didn't tell her the name. And she says, yeah, I heard it. And I said, you did? I said, yeah, I heard you singing it, and I was in your studio, and I happened to see the lyrics on there. She says, if you don't mind, I don't care to listen to it. And I said, I respect that. I respect that. Can I ask you why? She says, I detest that title and that phrase. And my response was, did you ever imagine that maybe the reason I wrote it was because I too detest it? You know, I do. I do. It's I find that a very offensive slang terminology, and that's why I struggle with it so much. Why did I write this song? How is this song glorifying God as a Christian? I don't know. I still struggle with it. But it's one of those that, well, one radio station played it, and I'll probably never have that opportunity. I don't know if I could even take the opportunity to sing it before an audience, because I just don't want to go down that road. I think it's one of those songs that's better left as a recording and not. So, boy, we digress here.
No, I think we're right on point. Okay. I did want to say something about music and, you know, that the one you were talking about, that, you know, you were writing about
music. Don't know
music.
What I'd be without you in my life.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Sure.
I read a book by a woman named Candace Pert. She was a molecular chemist, I think. And she was the one that discovered the opioid receptor. But anyway, and in that book or another book she wrote, she was talking about how our cells, you know, we have all these drugs inside of us, just naturally.
Sure.
Opioids, cannabinoids, endorphins, all this stuff. And it's love, really, in a lot of ways, that keeps those connections, keeps the synapses open, so that the drugs can hit the cells and ring them in a way.
Yeah.
So if children don't get love when they're young, a lot of those receptors don't get open, and that's why sometimes people turn to drugs.
Really?
Yes.
Physiologically,
yes.
Love,
yes, because the receptors died off.
Yeah.
If they don't get, you know, enough of the things that stimulate the natural neurochemicals inside us.
Yeah.
But she said, music can open those receptors back up.
Oh my.
So you might not have had love, but music, which explained to me why so many teenagers would walk around with music, you know, on their, what do you call them?
Headphones
on their ears. Yeah, constantly. It made them feel good.
Exactly.
It opened up those receptors.
I want you to, after we're done with this, I want you to tell me what that is. I want to hear about that. But that kind of segues into another song, Love is a Mystery. is it's a heartfelt song about this man getting up, shaving, taking his newspaper, eating, and taking the bus. And he walks down this, to this place, and he walks down this long hallway, and he goes in and visits his wife. His wife is in a nursing home with Alzheimer's. And the song is basically about long-lasting love and commitment of what it takes. Traditional marriages, sometimes they'll say for better or for worse. I don't know if that's in a lot of marriages now. Might be. I think in some religious marriages it is. But I believe that. And, you know, stuff happens to people, and they fall out of love, or they get divorced for some reason or whatever. But this is a song that talks about a couple that was in love, and she got Alzheimer's, and she's in this nursing home, and he goes to visit her, and she sees the love of his life and has no idea who he is. But and it just talks about love is a mystery, you know, sails on open seas, and it goes through stormy waters, and difficult times in life, but it's still present. Interestingly enough, I had another song review on that one, and people had a really hard time with the line, "Love is forever," because true love lasts forever. And I thought about changing it. And I decided not to, because I really believe that. To say that love doesn't last forever is not looking at a big picture. A relationship might not last forever, but love does last forever. You know, it'll last after we die, if you believe in a life after this. But love is forever. I mean, love will always be around us in one way or the other. Maybe it won't be in a relationship, but love really does last forever. And in this case, you can say forever until she dies or whatever, because that was what their forever was. Mm. You know, we talk about, the cliche now I hear on these home shows is, I want to buy my forever home, you know, and I saw a real estate agent, you know, finding your forever home. Well, what is a forever home? Mm. You know, it's a place you live in for 15 years until the kids grow up and you move to someplace smaller. It's just a house that you love. It's the perfect house in your mind. It's not a forever home. Mm-hmm. You know, so why can't love last forever? Why can't I use that line in a song? Mm-hmm. If we sing about our forever homes, why can't I use that in a song? So I just left it. But that's one of my favorite ones because it's a positive song. It's got kind of a James Taylor feel to it. So that's what I wanted. Like "How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You." He didn't write that, but he recorded it. Mm-hmm. So, okay. But that's what that's about. I just happened to think about that when you mentioned.
Well, why don't we talk just a little bit about bicycles?
Woo!
This is for the benefit of my husband, Mark Knight.
Yeah, yeah.
So, just curious, what kind of bicycles do you like to ride?
Brand?
Well,
or kind.
Mark, my husband rides, you know, has a random, there's randonneur bikes, there are road bikes, there are mountain bikes, there
yeah.
are all these different kinds of bikes, you know, kind of.
Well, being in the business, I've had almost every bike from a recumbent to single speed to tandems to, you know, road bikes, full suspension mountain bikes. Right now, I have a carbon fiber road bike and a Surly single speed bike. Surly is made in Minnesota.
Oh.
And they make good beer too, but it's a different company. But Surly is kind of like a niche bike, I guess. I don't know. It's just, it's kind of like, I think that mindset, or the concept is it's the cool bike.
Mm.
You know, because it's the hipster bike.
Ah.
So you don't see a lot of them. It's usually people that ride Surleys and all city bikes are from Minneapolis are people that they're really into biking and no bikes. So it's kind of an eclectic, you know, kind
yeah.
of a quirky bike.
I know Surly
because
steel. He has a jersey, a Surly jersey.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Beer.
No.
Or bike. Oh, yeah, bike.
Yeah, he's got the bike jersey. Yeah.
So that's my single speed. And all, you know, I think there's a lot of bike mechanics that in bike shops, they have single speeds. And they build them out of old road bikes and that. But and then I have a hybrid. I sold my recumbent and sold my full suspension mountain bike. So I'm doing mostly road riding. And then my Surly is my coffee bike and mail bike. And in the winter, I put studded tires on it and ride it in the winter.
Oh, cool. That's interesting. Yeah, my husband has a single speed, and it's his go-to bike, and it's his winter bike.
Yeah.
Because they're so much easier to clean.
Yeah.
Than bikes that have, you know, the gears. I found
that out with a, you know, $3,000 full suspension mountain bike, which is not a lot these days for a mountain bike, but. I took it out. They have this event in the winter in Walker that involves it's a running race, you know, like about a 3-mile race or something like that. It's just for some big celebration of the city they did, and they wanted me to be the pace bike, and so I took it out and would ride it for that. And I thought, well, it was so cold, I just brought it to my shop, which isn't heated and it's not open in the winter, so it's not heated. I just stuck it in my stand and left it there. You know, well, I came out in the spring and there was corrosion all over the stick. So I ended up having to replace some things on it, you know, because of the salt.
Right.
And that too. But
yeah, anyways. I lived in Buffalo for many years, so I know about the salt.
You know about that.
Yeah, we had dead muffler season in Buffalo.
Dead muffler season.
You know, because the mufflers would just rust off, and then at the end of the winter, all these people who drive with their winter collars with their rusted mufflers.
Oh,
dodging the muffler.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's bikes. You know, I had a retail bike shop for 6 years, and then I've been doing it for 25, just repairing bikes. And I'm the only guy in Walker has a world-class bike trails. So it's a really big.
How many miles connect?
Oh, hundreds and hundreds of miles.
Are these,
I think they have three
paved
or four paved.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's hundreds of miles. I think there's like, well, people come to town and say, where's the trailhead? And they say, which one? You know, you can access the trail on probably four different points.
Wow.
In a town of 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. But just to put it in perspective, several years ago, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, the American League of Bicyclists, I think it is, has this designation called bicycle-friendly communities and bicycle-friendly businesses. And it can be pretty difficult to get it. The application for a bicycle-friendly community is about 100 pages long. They want engineering reports. They really scrutinize you. And they have four levels, silver, bronze, gold, and platinum that you can get on this thing. And I think it was about 5 years ago I applied. The Chamber of Commerce was applying for, in Walker, was applying for Walker to become a bicycle-friendly community, and they encourage businesses to apply. Well, a bunch of businesses applied, and I was the only bike shop in town, so I decided to apply too. And that year, there were the league gave bicycle-friendly business awards to 88 businesses in the nation. And out of the 88 businesses in the nation that got it, 12 were from Walker.
Wow.
A town of 1,000.
That is cool.
That's amazing.
So
maybe we want to move there.
And I just reapplied and got, I had the highest, which was gold, out of all of the business in Walker. And I just reapplied and I got a platinum, so I have the highest award in that too. And I think I'm the smallest bike shop in Minnesota, maybe the nation.
Wow.
It's 200 square feet.
Wow.
Which is smaller than most people's bedrooms.
Mm. Yeah. So, now, Walker doesn't have much up and down on their terrain, do they?
Not a whole lot, because it's rails to trails, but they do have this trail that's a 23-mile trail that you go out and it comes back into Walker. And that was right through the Chippewa National Forest, and that's all hills. Mm. And the locals call it the Pyrenees.
Oh.
Because of the hills.
Yes, yeah.
And I don't know what the grade is, but it's pretty challenging. It's very remote, but it's all paved.
Well, I'm very serious. We'd love to come visit, take a train ride out.
Yeah, they have people from all over the world come to bike there. I mean, it's just amazing the people that I've met and people that are crossing, biking across the country. And then people that come up, they have the Paul Bunyan Trail, which is a 100-mile trail from Bemidji, which is 40 miles north, and Brainerd, which is about 60 miles south. Walker, and get on that and ride. And a lot of people will come up from whatever, and they'll park in at the trailhead in Brainerd and bike it all the way up for over 2 days to Bemidji, 100 miles, and then turn around and bike back. So it's a nice ride.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of tour groups that come through, and that's so.
Okay.
Well, you and Linda came out on a train this time, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we used to take the train out here.
Yeah, that's nice. So easy to take your bike on a train.
Yeah, me and guitars.
Yeah.
I just take guitars on the train. The joke in our family is my son-in-law is a pilot for Delta, and we take the train. Yeah. he kind of laughs at us. In fact, you know, it was like last year we were talking, and we got out here and said, oh, my goodness, the Empire Builder had a train crash. I think there was, it went off the tracks, and there was two people killed. Huh. And that's the train we take. And then my son-in-law says, did you hear about the plane crash? I said, what? Today? And he said, that's because there wasn't one. You hear about the plane crash? Yeah. No, I didn't. That's because there wasn't one. So it's kind of a family joke. But we should take the, we flew back last year because it was a lot cheaper, and we got us 40 miles from town. But a train comes in, we have to get a ride home. It's about 65 miles to the depot from to our house. Doesn't go through Walker, but we like the train. We like the vibe on train. It's very relaxing. I take my guitars and I go in the observation car and play guitar, entertain people. So
good. How long is the train ride?
Well, that varies. It's supposed to be about a 33-hour ride, but the last one was 44 hours because of the cold.
Ah, okay.
And the train got behind those Amtrak engines when it's, you know, that frigid and that cold. They just don't run well.
Oh, okay.
So almost everything that could go wrong went wrong in that trip. But the staff worked really hard, and the people on the train were just, hey.
Oh, I like that.
It's all part of the experience. So yeah. Even though we were 10, 12 hours late coming in, it was still. But the nice thing is that Amtrak sent us two really nice vouchers.
Okay.
So that's going to help pay for the trip back.
Oh, good.
So,
well, the Empire Builder is the train we moved out from Decorah, Iowa, which is where Luther College, where Dad taught, to Parkland, PLU, in 1961. So that was...
I remember when I was going to Bible school, and we go back, a lot of the kids who lived in Minneapolis or the Midwest would take the train back. There's about 10, 12 of us that took the train back.
It was cheap.
I mean, it's not cheap now, but we've been on it 8, 9 times out here, and we used to get, I think for the first 2 or 3 times we went coach because it was a lot cheaper. It was like $600 for 2 of us for a round trip.
Yeah.
That's $150
each way.
It was dirt cheap.
Yeah.
And but the problem is that after we got back, I'd spent 3 months in physical therapy. So my wife started shopping online, and she would find these sales that they have. And the nice thing is, you don't get buy a ticket to get a room, which is basically a sleeping closet. It's probably 3.5 feet by 8 feet.
Yeah.
And but you get your meals included, and meals on the train are good.
Yeah.
Right there. They're nice.
Well, I'm glad we got to talk about trains. Trains, bikes, and guitars.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us today.
Yeah.
And we're here with Paul Nye from Walker, Minnesota, a musician, and we'll be airing many of his songs. And if you want to listen to this interview again, you can always go to radiotacoma.org. and to our programming archives and find Radio Tacoma interviews. And if you want to let us know how much you enjoyed this interview, send an email to info@radiotacoma.org. Thank you so much.